Welcome to In Focus. It is Wednesday, and that means it's time for a visit from the Leeds, Granville, and Lanark District Health Unit. Joining us today, as she does every Wednesday, Dr. Lena Lee, Medical Officer of Health. Doctor, welcome back.
Hi, it's great to be back.
And also with us today, Summon Sheikh, who is a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist. Summon, welcome to Lake 88.
Thanks so much.
Now, we're going to speak to you about a number of important things. The main one here, of course, today, food costs and food insecurity. But before we do that, we have another very important topic that we want to speak to the doctor about. And of course, this has to do with COVID-19 and what has become known as the triple threat of respiratory season. I also want to just get your thoughts on what was suggested as far as masking goes. Lots to cover today, so let's get right into it. The COVID-19 stats came out yesterday, and there's still some good numbers, but as always, there's still some areas of concern.
Yeah, so I gotta say, our COVID-19 numbers are falling and continuing to fall. So last week, over the course of the week, in our most recent report, we had 89 cases. We do have 12 people in hospital and 2 people in ICU. And so, like you said, Bob, we do still have some serious illness. But overall, the situation is that the COVID-19 transmission is falling. Now, on the other hand, we do also see that the respiratory illness emergency room visits in our region are rising. And so with COVID-19 falling, but that rising, really what we're seeing is non-COVID-19 respiratory viruses and other things spreading in our region. I think, you know, there's been a lot of communications both from ourselves at the Health Unit as well as from the province and from hospitals talking about why, which is flu and RSV, which is the primary things that are otherwise circulating in our region as well. And so we're definitely seeing that. In fact, we're seeing probably more flu circulation right now than COVID-19 circulation, which is the first time we've had that since COVID-19. And really, it is concerning because we're having more cases of flu than we typically would this time of year, as well as more cases of flu in general. So this is shaping up to be a relatively bad flu year, so worse than what we would have had in typical flu years before COVID-19.
Not to put you on the spot, but why is that? Why are we seeing such an increase?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for both flu and RSV, a big part of it is because we haven't had that transmission in a while. And so there's a group of people who will be more susceptible to flu than they otherwise would have been. So you can think of it as, you know, we've had two and a bit years of COVID-19 where people haven't had the flu. And so there's all these people who maybe have never had the flu and are now more susceptible. And the same for RSV. And that's actually especially the case for young children. So I think we've talked about this in this program before. So this is sort of a callback to previous week's conversation, where indeed young children are more susceptible to the severe outcomes of RSV. And also they haven't had RSV circulating. They haven't encountered it immunologically. And so now this group of relatively large group of kids are encountering RSV for the first time. And so just by sheer numbers, there's more of them who are going to have severe illness. And I should be clear, typically people who get these illnesses, RSV and flu, they don't have severe illness. It comes and goes, but a small proportion of them do have hospitalization, ICU stays, and even sometimes deaths. And that unfortunate situation is just more likely to happen just because of the sheer number who are getting infected now.
And for the rest of us, it lingers. This is something that will hang on a lot longer than, say, a normal cold for many people.
Yeah, so especially for the flu, it can really knock you out. For RSV now, most people will have gotten RSV at least once by the time they're say going to school even. Most common age by which you get RSV is 2. So by 2, usually you've had a bout and you will potentially get reinfected, but those infections are generally less severe.
Okay, now it seems like we've been training for the past almost 3 years now for this type of a situation when it comes to these infections, these viruses floating around. One of the big things that we're being told about is to again exercise the precautions that we really have learned about over the course of dealing with COVID. Of course, as I mentioned earlier this week, we heard from Dr. Kieran Moore, that he is strongly suggesting that people wear masks when going out in public. He fell just short of mandating it. So, but still, it is a strong suggestion. So, your thoughts on that and the effect that it would have on particularly the scene here in Lanark, Leeds, and Grenville?
Yeah, so I really would say there's two things I'd want to emphasize. One is looking at all of those layers of protection. So masking is definitely one, and doing it. So that's one is looking at all the layers, and the second is doing it for everyone, not just for yourself. So I think locally, what we've talked about, and up until recently, the province has also been approaching it as a matter of personal decision to say, look at your risk assessment yourself. What is your own health conditions and the health conditions of those who you live with and those who are around you, and then make decisions about what you want to do based on that. Now, what we're really wanting to focus on is not just that personal risk assessment or those of your family, but more so all of that, our community, and really having a communal approach, thinking about our neighbors, other people who live in and around us, in our communities, and taking all of those precautions because of that. So masking is one of them. And definitely, I would say my hope, even I would maybe push it as far as saying my expectation, is that people will be wearing a mask in public spaces. Again, not necessarily just as a matter of protecting yourself, that remains important, but also to protect other people. If you are inadvertently, if you're ill and you don't realize it, then wearing a mask is a really strong way to prevent yourself from transmitting to others, along with other measures. So that includes staying home when you're sick, being honest about when you have symptoms, being honest with yourself, and avoiding going out if you're ill. Getting those vaccines, both COVID-19 and flu. And then other things like washing your hands frequently, including hand sanitizers. So, I'm asking for businesses and other public spaces to have hand sanitizer available readily again. Wearing that mask, like we talked about, in public spaces, not touching your eyes, nose, and mouth, because that's how those germs spread, get into your body is through your face often. And then also cleaning and disinfecting those high touch surfaces. So often it's doorknobs, and toys, computer keyboards, all of those things. And then lastly, covering your coughs and your sneezes. So that would be using a tissue, ideally, washing your hands afterwards, or coughing into your shoulder or your elbow, those sorts of things. So all of those things are important when it comes to preventing all of these infections. They are effective for all of them. And so, Bob, what you were saying about us being practiced on this, it's definitely true. We've been doing this. So it's just a matter of doing it more than we've been doing maybe up until recently, and being conscientious about it, right? Like thinking about not just yourself, but really that community, that collective action. And I think it's such a strength of our region. already that that people really look out for each other. People are working in communities and living in communities where we get to know each other and think about each other. And this is just one of those things that is part of it.
And we talk about, you know, working together and teamwork. We're kind of in a perfect storm right now because, and I know the hospitals aren't necessarily under your jurisdiction, but you mentioned the ER visits going up. We know the staffing issues that they are facing in our hospitals right here in Lanark, Leeds and Grenville and across the province. Doing these preventative measures, carrying them out, will help to keep people out of hospital and out of those high stress situations where these workers are doing everything they can to treat as many people as they can as they come through the door with these viruses.
Absolutely. That's really, really critical. I think, you know, when we think about protecting the community, one of the things that we really, one of the reasons for that is because we want to give, you know, slow down transmission as much as possible, similar to previous years with COVID-19, slowing down that transmission so that we can give hospitals time to see the people that they need to see. Other health issues are continuing to happen. And so people are needing to go to the ER for a number of reasons and see their clinicians. I've been speaking to a number of physicians and hospitals about how busy, how explosive the number of ER visits and visits to physicians has been. And really as a part of protecting them and being part of the community for their sake as well. I think these are measures that will be effective in slowing down transmission and giving them time and space and reducing the workload for our really critical healthcare providers.
And of course, we need to roll up our sleeves, you know, whether it be COVID or the flu, let's get those shots into arms, right?
Absolutely. And I really, really want to emphasize the flu vaccine in this particular talk, because it's not too late. It's really critical. We know flu is transmitting in our region. The flu vaccine is the thing. So, you know, when we talk about risk of transmission and risk of severe illness, the flu vaccine will decrease the risk for both. It is a good match this year. So please, please, please get your flu vaccine as soon as you can. Do it today. Do it tomorrow. Put a deadline in your schedule. Put it somewhere. Put an alarm. Get that flu shot.
Before we move on to speaking with Summon, is there anything else that you wanted to let our listeners know or just make sure that they know? I know you've delivered several messages already.
Yeah, absolutely. Just once again, it's always a pleasure to be here. I always really treasure this opportunity to come on this station and also speak to everybody every Wednesday. I really enjoy it. So thank you.
You're very welcome. And we very much appreciate you being here, because every week we get these big announcements. We get this word from the province, and you bringing it down to the local level is very valuable for our listeners, just so that we have that understanding as to what is going on. And really, that's what Summon is here to talk about today. Summon, welcome again to the show. You are a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist. And boy, when you talk about an issue that has been in the news, coast to coast to coast in Canada, we are talking about food costs and food insecurity. And you're going to talk to us a little bit about it, you know, from the local level and things that we can be doing. First off, maybe you can just sort of give us a bit of a summary here.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me today to talk about this topic. It's definitely a very timely and important topic. Like you mentioned, food insecurity is, you know, it's a big concern. And locally, what we do each year, really since 1988, so with the exception of 2020 and 2021 because of the pandemic, we do a project called a nutritious food basket. Basically what that is we look at the cost of a variety of nutritious foods across several grocery stores in Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark, and we just determine the average cost of eating a nutritious, balanced diet for those living in the Tri-County area.
Yeah, and you know what? I'll be honest with you. I forgot about this, and then I saw the notes for today, and then it just sort of hit me like a ton of bricks. And I thought, wow, this is going to be very interesting to take a look at over the course of this conversation. And so I think for people to understand, we need to know what is included in that costing of that food basket.
Yeah. So we basically look at healthy foods that you would find in the Canada's Food Guide, right? So we look at a variety of canned, frozen, and fresh fruits and vegetables. We look at whole grains. We look at protein foods, really everything that a nutritious diet should be comprised of.
And so when we're looking at the results of this study, creating this basket, what are you looking to determine from this project?
So in a nutshell, the what we're looking for is really just how well people can afford healthy food in our area. So this year, when we did the study, our results showed that individuals and households living in food insecurity situations, they struggle to buy enough nutritious foods after paying their rent, after paying bills, and all those other living expenses as well. So it's a big concern for people who live in our area that experience food insecurity.
And Dr. Lee, food security, I mean, that is one of the foundations of good health, isn't it?
Absolutely. Eating nutritious food, having enough food to eat, even not having to deal with the stress of finding food, all of those elements are important for health.
So, Summon, maybe you can tell us some of the findings from the nutritious food basket costing this year. I've seen some of these numbers, and I think some of our listeners should be prepared to gasp a little.
Yes. Yeah. So what I'm going to say is a bit numbers heavy, so bear with me here. So, but the point of this information is really to highlight that food insecurity is it's not really a food issue, it's an income issue. So let me just get down into the nitty-gritty of it. So if we take a family of four, so if we're taking two adults, one male and one female, and they're both ages 31 to 50 years of age. And we've got two children, so a female aged 48, 4 to 8, and a male aged 14 to 18. So for that family of four, the average monthly cost of a nutritious food basket in our area is $1,109, and that was in June of 2022 that we did that calculation. So if we're looking at a household that's living on Ontario Works, and they have a monthly income of $2,760. If you minus their rent, which is an average of around $1,561 in LGL, so they have around $1,199, so around $1,200 left for everything else. And that's before accounting for the cost of food. And again, if we take out the cost of food, which is around $1,109, that really it leaves only around $90 in that for that family for all their other expenses, which includes hydro, transportation, insurance, phone and internet, childcare, clothing, household supplies, toiletries, just minimal recreation, extracurricular activities, all those other necessities that are important. So it really just highlights that, again, it's an income issue. It's not so much a food issue.
There are so many people who get their paychecks wherever that may be from, and they say, I'd like to do this, I'd like to do this, or I'd like to do this with this paycheck. And then they start paying the bills, and then they realize that they need to put that off. And in most cases, these aren't luxuries. These are things that they need to get in contact with bills, whether it be hydro, internet, whatever, and say, I'm going to have to only pay a little bit and then pay more next. It's such an incredible source of stress.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you hear people, struggling to make a choice between do I want to pay rent or do I want to buy food, right? It's very much a reality for a lot of people.
And Dr. Lee, when you put someone into that type of situation, now you've got someone who's struggling with getting the nutritious food that they need for themselves and their family. And then they've got the mental health aspect on there too, the stress and the depression that can come with that as well.
Absolutely. And I think something else to keep in mind, especially when we're thinking about this this theoretical family with the two children is that the effect of nutrition on health is in childhood, but that effect also extends into adulthood as the children grow up. And so that affordable food and having enough income for food in particular is so critical for growing minds and growing bodies.
So yeah. Saman, what can be done to change the situation?
So there are a few solutions that are possible, kind of more on a population-based level. So things like, you know, supporting and expanding tax filing initiatives that are targeted at low-income individuals and households, ensuring access to safe, affordable housing, childcare, education, and transportation, encouraging local businesses and agencies to become living wage employers, and ensuring social assistance rates provide for the basic cost of living, because we know from the study that the people who are most affected by food insecurity are those who are surviving on social assistance, right? So just again, and just to point out that while alone, all of these solutions may not eliminate poverty, together they can help.
Yeah, certainly. And we know just by watching the three election campaigns that we've seen in the past year that it's high on the list for politicians to help alleviate some of the stresses. Affordable housing comes into mind. Affordable internet is another one that they're looking at around here as well. But it takes time, doesn't it, Saman?
It definitely does. Yeah, time and energy. And again, that mental fortitude, right?
Absolutely. There is, I don't want to say some good news, but there is a positive that happens every year this time of year, and that would be food drives for the holiday season. We take part in one here at Lake 88 every year, of course, called the Build a Mountain of Food campaign. We've got a stop coming up this weekend. We've already been in two other places too. It brings in a lot of food and a lot of money to help this through our local food banks, or for our local food banks. So people who would like to donate and who can afford it, they can really use this as an opportunity, as a great way to help other people in their community, right, Saman?
For sure. Yeah. During the holiday season, and I mean, ideally all year long if possible, right? Because we know that food banks are, you know, they get a lot of really great resources during the holiday season, but then sometimes they struggle for the rest of the year. Definitely, it is important to donate food. It is a great short-term solution, and it's important to make sure that, you know, people are donating good, nutritious, and food-safe foods as well. So I just want to point out that we have a resource on our website called Donating Safe and Healthy Food for anybody who wants to check it out. It's a great resource. But again, you know, the main point is that those longer-term solutions are needed, which is, you know, the critical conversations with family, friends, colleagues, policymakers, to really get at the root of food insecurity.
And we'll just sort of leave it on summarizing again some of the health effects of not being able to afford food. Maybe Dr. Lee, you can start with this, and then Saman, we'll get your thoughts on that as well. So Dr. Lee, if you could, you know, talk to that a little.
Yeah, so I think there's two perspectives to take. One is just generally for food, being hungry is distracting. And also it does, you know, having the energy to do what you need to do, that's also really important, as well as having the nutrition that you need, right? The vitamins, the minerals, all of those elements of getting those critical foods into your body, and not having shortage is not the word, deficiencies, that's the word, of vitamins and minerals. Those are all really critical. And then more broadly, I think we've talked a little bit about the effect, the mental effect of being food insecure has on individuals, on families, and the long-term effects of not having enough nutritious food on growing bodies for kids. Those are all, I think, really critical health effects to think about.
And Saman, you're nodding your head quite a bit as the doctor speaks, so I know you agree with what she's saying.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, I'll just echo what Lena said, that definitely, you know, nutritious, not having enough nutritious foods can lead to vitamin and mineral nutrient deficiencies, as well as not having enough food energy. Also, just again, something to point out that Lena said before too, that the growth and development, right? It starts in pregnancy, and nutrition is very important during pregnancy as well, and in about birth outcomes too. And then later in life, you know, all throughout our life, those chronic diseases, not having enough nutritious foods can really put you at risk for developing chronic diseases later in life as well.
Well, I want to thank you both today for this wonderful information that you've brought for our listeners. Very important and vital information, both on the triple threat of the virus season that we are experiencing right now, Dr. Lee, and then, of course, the importance of nutrition and what is going on as far as food insecurity goes. Saman, I really appreciate it. I know that there are more resources available on both topics at healthunit.org. You can also visit the social media for the Health Unit. Just go onto any of your platforms and then search Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. You're going to find it. Lots of great information there, including where vaccination clinics are taking place as well. So you don't want to miss that. Dr. Lee, a pleasure. We will speak to you next week.
Yeah, thanks. See you next week.
And Saman, thank you so much for being here today. We look forward to speaking to you again down the road too.
Thanks so much for having me, Bob.
You're very welcome. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening today. Have a wonderful afternoon.